start engines checklist. Circuit breakers and switches.
Checked and on.
Voice recorder.
On and tested.
Oxygen.
On 100 speakers checked.
On 100 speakers checked, right. Indicator lights.
Checked.
Flight control panel switches.
They're on.
Anti-skid.
Tested and on.
Stall warning.
Tested.
Speed command.
Tested.
Altitude alert.
Tested.
Instrument transfer switches.
Three normal and reset.
Auto brakes.
Off.
Emergency exit lights.
Armed.
Alternate flap switches.
Three off.
Flight recorder.
Tested and set.
Seatbelt no smoking sign.
On.
Transponder.
Standby.
Window heat.
On.
Anti-ice.
Off.
Pitot-static heat.
Checked and off.
Nav lights.
On.
Fire warning.
Switches in and tested.
Emergency brake and pressure.
It's off and we have 1200 PSI.
Confirmed. Flight instruments.
Set and cross-checked.
Mach and AC warnings.
Tested.
Static sources.
Normal.
Gear lever.
Down in three green.
Omega.
Checked.
Radar.
Tested and standby.
Radios and altimeters.
Checked and set.
GPWS.
Tested.
Flap lever.
With the gauges.
Stab trim switches.
Normal.
Start levers.
Cut off.
Speed brake.
Forward.
Auto speed brakes.
Disarmed and lights are out.
Parking brakes.
It's set and I see the pressure. It's up.
Trim controls.
Green band and set.
Electrical panel.
Check battery on.
Fuel panel.
F25,000 pounds panel set.
25,000 pounds are checked. Hydraulic panel.
Checked and set.
Oil quantity.
4 gallons.
Air conditioning and pressurization.
Checked and set.
Auto pack trim switches.
Cut out.
Bleed valves.
4 open.
Aft air stairs.
We're down and lights out.
We're down to the line, sir. I'll check with the cabin. Cabin says they're ready.
Let's go below the line.
Door lights.
Checked and out.
Fuel quantities rechecked.
It's 25,000 pounds, I see.
Beacon.
On.
Second officer panel.
Set for start.
Folks, you've been cleared to push back from the gates, so settle back, relax, and enjoy the flight today on Eastern Flight 11.
We're coming to you live from beautiful Ponte Vedra, Florida, again tonight, where the temperature is a pleasant 78 degrees. We're Eastern Airlines radio show with 60 minutes of live broadcast, which features you, our listeners, and our callers. Our call-in number is, if you'll write this down, our call-in number is area code 213-816-1611. Let me repeat that number. Area code 213-816-1611. We do have a chat feature on our screen during our live broadcast, and we can answer any questions sent that way. So if you prefer not to talk live and you want to ask a question over the chat feature, just go ahead and type it in, and we'll see if we can answer that. Our website is www.ealradioshow.com, and the email which will reach us at is host@ealradioshow.com. There is so much on the website to keep you informed between shows, such as the latest news, photo albums, which is becoming very popular now with our chapters sending us photos. We have videos, live chat room, Eastern history, logbook blog, and of course you can tune into our live broadcast from the homepage. Now tonight, our third caller will receive the Eastern Radio Show Mystery Prize, and you'll hear this bell if you are that caller. Bell. And the first person telling us the aircraft that we read the checklist at the beginning of our show will win also a very special mystery prize. Tonight, we will introduce our new radio show co-host, but first, let's catch up on our favorite crew members, Captain Neil, Bud, Margaret, Luann, and Luther. Things are kind of quiet here at the radio station without Margaret and Luann. Don't you think so, Bud?
Is that why the chair's missing our pretty co-host? She's gone on vacation and taken Luann?
Well, as you know, Bud, Margaret and Luann are from Hazard, Kentucky, and she has a big family there. Mom and Dad have 6 girls. Can you imagine 6 girls?
Oh, my God.
She goes back and visits with them as much as she can. Well, this time of year, she and her sisters get together and visit the big casino over in Louisville, Kentucky, on the Ohio River. They have a great time, and she comes back with lots of stories about their ventures. It ought to be even more interesting this time, as Margaret has invited her high school friend, remember Lou Ann? And Lou Ann's boyfriend, Luther, to go with them.
Oh, that ought to be a hoot for sure, especially with Lou Ann and Luther going along. I hope they don't get bounced out. You know, Neil, we ought to see if we can give Margaret a call and see what's going on. I've got her cell number. You want to try?
Sure, why not? Let's see what's going on with Lou Ann and Luther along. You can only imagine.
Let's see, I'm checking. I've got the number here.
Okay, let's see if we can give her a call.
All right.
We're trying to connect now. And let's see if she will actually pick up the phone and we can get her. At the casino, folks, you'll be hearing Margaret or Lou Ann, whoever answers the phone.
I wonder if she was the one that cut the rope for that other restaurant to flow down the river.
Well, you know, it was out of service, I think, this past week.
Yeah.
And she was telling us that...
Hello, this is Margaret.
Margaret. Hey, hello,
hey.
Margaret.
Hey, how are you?
I bet you can't guess who this is, dear.
I bet I can. Is that you, Captain Mick O'Malley?
Yes, it is, love. I'm here in Orlando, Ireland. I had a chartered flight on a bunch of Irish Micks coming to Disney World for St. Patrick's Day, which was yesterday, you know. They tried to get the world's most famous Mick to join the clan, you know, Mick Mouse. But all we got instead was a bunch of grumpies, dopeys, and sleepies. Little chunky little leprechauns, as you say.
Oh, that's funny. Listen, Captain Mick, I'm going to have to let you talk with Lou Ann. She's about to rip this phone out of my hand, so I'm going to put her on the line, okay?
Ah, great. Let her bring her over here. I'd love to talk to her.
Okay. Hey, Captain Mick, you ought to be here with us. We're just having a blast. We're here on the boat, and we're just trying to win some money, and I'm here with my new boyfriend, Luther. Sure wish you lived closer to Hazard, though. Ireland's just too darn far away to carry on any courting, if you know what I mean.
I sure hope he takes good care of you, lass. I'm going to hand you back over to Bud. Maybe the luck of the Irish will be with you.
Okay.
Hello, Luann. Have you won anything yet?
Oh, Bud, as they say in Kentucky, I've won about $1.298, and that kind of means that I've lost every penny I have. But anyway, I'm just here to be with Margaret and her sisters and Luther, of course. And, oh, my gosh, I just hear him hollering at me right now. Hold on, Bud. Let me see what he's saying.
Luann, Margaret. I found three winning machines over here. Nobody's playing in them. I'm winning four quarters every time I put a dollar in them. I can't lose with these machines.
Oh, Luther, sometimes I think you're just plumb foolish. That's a coin changer machine. Of course, when you put in a dollar, you're going to get four quarters. Oh, can I talk to Captain Neil just a moment?
Sure. Sure, Luann. Go ahead.
Captain Neil, I see our Kentucky captain is here. I'd love for him to just chat with you a moment. Hey, Captain Paul, come on over here and say hello to Captains Neil and Bud of Eastern Airlines.
Hello there, Captain. How you doing?
Oh, fine, Captain Paul. This is Captain Neil. How you doing with the girls?
Oh, doing great. We just flew up in our little red Lear to surprise Lou Ann and Luther. That Lou Ann's a case. I tell you, we got a real low plane. It takes us longer to take off and land than it does to make the trip. We don't ever get too high above the clouds. We try to keep that thing down close to the ground so everybody can hear us. We got racing straps on it. That way they can see us, you know, and then we put these glass packs on this dual exhaust, and boy, you talk about a racket.
That's good.
Glass packs on the Lear.
That must sound nice taking off, I tell you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's part of it. Well, up. Got to go. These women are ready to go to Paula Deen Buffett. She's a real hand to cook, that little woman is. We're going to go get some fried green tomatoes, grits, whole cakes. But I tell you what, she's got a real meal here.
Well, I hope you've got enough money to pay for that that clan.
Well, the good thing is when you come up here, if you invest a little money in some of these machines, they'll comp you enough to feed you so you don't have to worry too much about it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I come for the food. I know I ain't going to win no money, you know, so I just come for the food and visit with Luann and Luther, old Luther, but he's a case.
Well, let Luther show you how to win some money with those coin machines he's found.
I'm afraid old Luther can't show you how to win. He can tell you how, but he sure can't ever show us how. Well, I got to go, okay? We'll talk later. Good to see you.
Okay, good talking with you. Hope to meet you one of these days in the future.
Hey, Captain, I'm going to have to go to, I'm going to go by the gift shop and pick up some goodies to send to my favorite guys in Jacksonville, and that'd be you and Bud. And then I'm going to hit the slot machines again. I'm going to try to win some money back.
Well, Luann, and Margaret, don't forget the roll of nickels I gave you to make me some money now. I want you to bring me back at least $100, and y'all have fun, and keep Luther away from any of that old leftover green beer.
Oh, well, Captain, Captain, you're talking about that $100. I don't remember a thing, and I just think you're breaking up. But if I win something, I'll bring it back to you, okay?
Oh, y'all have fun. Good talking with you.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that was quite an experience, wasn't it?
That was really good. I'm glad we did get to talk to Margaret and Luann, and good that she had some friends with her there at the casino. I know the girls, there are six of them in the family. They're having a great time, and so if you are still with us, Luann and Margaret, y'all have a great time and drive safe coming home. We sure do miss you.
Yeah, I just want to tell you it's. Too bad you're not here. It's 80. It's 81 today and be 83 tomorrow.
Yeah.
So dress warm.
There you go. We do have a new guest host with us this evening, and hopefully he's here. But first of all, let me introduce you folks to Jim Hart, and just a little bit about Jim Hart, who's down in West Palm Beach, and we hope to have him as a regular. But just a little background about Jim. After high school in Maine, Jim Hart's folks were told by the draft board that he was next to be called, and if he wanted to have a choice of services, he should enlist, which he did, and Jim chose naval aviation. He served on the aircraft carrier USS Lake Champlain CVA-39 for 1 year as an AE-2, which is an aviation electrician second class. Jim refused a commission because of the continued commitment beyond the 8 years he had to serve. Good thing he did, because many of his friends and graduates found themselves back in Vietnam after Korea. Jim served 5 years active and 3 years reserve. He joined Eastern Airlines December of 1957 at Hartford, Springfield, as a ticket counter agent in what he was told would be a management training program, and the sky was the limit. He could go as far as he could. Jim spent 3 months on the ticket counter, 1 month in operations, 1 month in air cargo, 1 month in radio, and 1 month in reservations. Then his big break came along with district sales manager Fred Blackwell invited Jim to be a field sales representative visiting travel agencies and commercial firms and doing a lot of air travel. He immediately broke many field sales records and was promoted to city sales manager of New Haven, Connecticut, where he lasted just 8 months before being transferred to Washington, D.C. as the city sales manager for 13 months and then being asked to transfer to New York, New York's home office. He joined the home office staff in late 1963 as the manager of Interline Sales. And a few months later as manager of convention and hotel sales, and finally as manager of passenger relations. All of these positions put Jim in touch with a wide range of officials within the company. Jim was asked to coordinate the first mass moving in the company's history. This was a move of 10,000 dealers and distributors from the Massey Ferguson Heavy Equipment Farm Manufacturing Company of Toronto, Canada, to Mexico City. We used 159 passenger stretch DC-8 aircraft and had 110 individual flights from many U.S. and Canadian cities, Jim told me. This is when Jim hired Mr. Eddie Arnold. Let me repeat, Mr. Eddie Arnold, for 18 days at $1,000 a day as entertainment for the attendees. He had a promotion budget of $100,000, and the entire move was worth over $1 million to Eastern Airlines. After one of the longest strikes, Jim was the lead person in a program to get the Eastern employees fired up about the new Eastern. This was when Floyd D. Hall was Eastern's president. Mr. Hall did one hell of a job bringing us back, and he changed the image of Eastern in the eyes of the traveling public, Jim said. There are so many stories that we hope he will share from his days in Washington as sales manager when President John F. Kennedy was killed in Dallas, for instance. Jim said it was hard to imagine the request he was getting from so many countries all over the world wanting to charter our airplanes for the funeral. We hope he will be a regular contributor as host, co-host to our radio show. And Jim, if you are with us this evening, I hope you are, because I've given you one hell of a build-up here. If you will say hello, Neil, and I'm here with you. Jim, are you there?
Got to press that one, Jim.
You have to press one, I hope. While he's trying to figure out the number to push, let me once again remind you folks of our call-in number. Of our call-in number to the station, it's area code 213, and the phone number is 816-1611, and that's 213, area code 816-1611.
Now, remember, when you call in, make sure, if you want to be heard online, you got to press that 1, and that will allow you to show up on our screen to let us know that you're interested in speaking with us.
Very good. Jim's looks like he's online. He's connected here, but we're just not hearing Jim. No, 561, I believe, is his area code, I hope.
Well, who
no,
is
that's
it?
Tim. Is Tim not online? No, but while we're waiting for Jim to check in with us, I've got a couple of things I want to ask you, Bud.
Okay.
See how old you are. See how far back in aviation you go.
Oh, boy.
Do you remember what we used to identify the airplanes when we were calling off our aircraft number to the control tower, especially small airplanes and business aircraft? We had the registration number, and we also have the phonetic codes that we used.
Oh, yes.
Like... One Abel George was one of them, I remember, and there was another one that I always like to say, but I won't say on the radio tonight. But you remember the new series was Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta. Do you remember the first four of World War II alphanumeric phonetic code?
Was it Abel, Baker, Charlie, Dog?
Abel, Baker, Charlie, and Dog. Correct.
What?
That's right.
Got them older than
That's
I thought
right.
it was.
And as we go on here, we might be able to ask you some more here. But Jim, are you with us now?
Yes, I am. I've been trying to yell at you, I guess, but you couldn't hear me. Remember, that's Abel, Baker, Charlie, Dog, Easy Fox, George, How, Item, Jake, King. I could go on and on.
Yeah, you got the list.
You know what's fun is when you're on the phone trying to talk to somebody and trying to spell your last name and you do it phonetically, and the people that don't know the phonetic alphabet try to answer it, and the words they come up with are hysterical.
How are you tonight, Jim? Did you read the little bio about yourself? Did I do okay?
Yes, you did a great job, Neil. In fact, I was going to mention another aside having to do with the Japan problems over there. I got on the internet a story from a United Airlines captain. Did you happen to get that one?
No, I don't think so. Tell us about it.
Well, there was a United Airlines captain who had come in from the United States, from the West Coast, and was in his hotel room when the earthquake struck. And he was so graphic in his description about not being able to stand up and how he thought, I'd better grab my bags and try to get downstairs before this thing crumbles around me. He was on the 14th floor, I think he said, of a 30-story hotel. But the upshot was he and his crew members tried to get in touch with United. They got some dispatcher somewhere that said, stay where you are. And so they did stay where they were. And finally, in I think he said in 85 hours, he had had just 5 hours of sleep, and they expected him to take an aircraft. He was flying a 777, I think he said. But can you imagine that, 5 hours sleep in 85 hours?
I can.
Yeah. That's from another United captain. Bud, of course, was a United captain, Jim, so he says yes.
Wow.
A lot of dispatch, I mean, they're good. The dispatch is really a good bunch of guys, but there are some people in there that just are not up with what's going on, and they have certain things that they have to do to keep the airplanes flying. But I remember one night I had flown all day, had put on something like 10 hours, and they said they wanted me to get the airplane back to the home base. Would I waive my rest time? To which I said, not only no, but hell no. And they were good about it. They didn't. Then there was no repercussions from it. But the audacity to have them ask to jeopardize safety for an on-time schedule is not my way of playing baseball.
Yeah.
No way.
But, you know, reading about the big movement of people that you had going from all over the place to Mexico City, that must have been quite a deal there.
Oh, it was. In fact, I spent 3 months in Mexico City, a month before the event, the month of the event, and then after. But do you know, everything ran so smoothly. I had 7 sales representatives. Riding each deadhead and each passenger-filled airplane, and I had the chuckle. I got a call late in the morning, or very late in the evening, I should say, from Mac McLaughlin. Mac was a sales rep in Miami that I chose to be part of my group, and Mac was calling me. He said, I can't believe this, Jim. Now, get this, from Miami. He was in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. It was something like 35 below zero, and he was asking me if he could buy a pair of gloves and maybe a scarf. I said, sure, go out and do it. But I said, who's watching the airplane? He said, we have a man in a line shack here. See, the airplane was just full of liquor and food and so on. But Mac, when he got back to Florida, was one happy person. There's something else that happened on that trip. The trip was considered quite a success. That is the movement. Flight number 110 was coming out of Montreal, and I got a call during the daytime that there was going to be a delay, and I said, do you know mechanically how long? And he said, roughly 10 hours. Well, we had within our budget scheduled some money. I guess I can say this. We had something in Spanish, I think, it's called La Mordita. It's called the bite. Well, anyway, we had to schedule $1,000 to pay off the day crew at the customs people, and they were clearing 159 passenger airplanes in 30 minutes. No one was looking at anything.
Wow.
But The flight number 110 came in 10 hours late, and no one had thought to pay off the night crew. So out of 159 passengers, 39 were revaccinated, And that was only considered a small glitch in the whole program.
Well, I can recall just vaguely about the one, I want to say it was in the 70s, Jim. You may remember the pet milk convention that they had, and I think they used mostly 727 flights that moved probably as many as 10,000. It seemed like to me it was a tremendous, let's call it an airlift, because that's basically what it was, I guess. And they did a fabulous job of getting those airplanes in and out with all the people for that big gathering of pet milk people from around the country. I believe it was pet milk. I'm almost sure. Maybe a caller.
Where did they go, Neil?
They went up to. I want to say it was Detroit. It was either Chicago or Detroit that they were carrying all the folks. I just vaguely remember. Did not participate, didn't fly any of the flights, but they were using a lot of Atlanta crews and aircraft, and it was a tremendous operation that they had.
See, that happened after my time with Eastern. I was there from 57 to 68.
Yeah. We have someone that has identified the airplane that we read the checklist, and it was Shea Bradley. So Shea Bradley is identifying the checklist that we read. Did you hear that checklist read that we had at the beginning of the show, Jim? Were you able to pick up the very beginning of the show?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I couldn't identify the aircraft. But I've been on since 5 minutes before six.
Oh, okay. And, it was Shea Bradley. She identified the 727 as the airplane, the before start engine checklist. So we'll give her a gift, and hopefully we'll have three callers here. We'll get another gift out.
That'll be good. Yeah.
Jim, you also, while we're talking here, you also... You were in Washington, D.C. at the time of Kennedy's assassination, and I think it was mentioned that you had callers that were trying to charter the Eastern aircraft from around the world.
That's right, but it appears that most of the people that had been working with the airline for many years were the first ones to... get the advantage of any spare airplanes that we had. I remember that time because I didn't sleep for almost 30 hours during that whole thing. And I remembered, wasn't it Walter Cronkite, almost broke down over the radio or television at that time.
That's right.
Walter and his family had been friends of mine since my home is on the island, my summer home on the island of Martha's Vineyard.
Uh-huh.
And Walter, he's been there for many, many years, along with Mike Wallace and a whole host of notables. But Walter, the first anniversary of his passing away was last August. And I'm a lifetime Rotarian, and our Rotary Club sponsored an event. We had over 500 people in the big Wailing Church in Edgartown that were there to listen to people who knew Walter very well. But that's history now, unfortunately.
Yeah. Where was your office there in Washington? Where were you?
Oh, I was at National Airport, and in fact, you can't believe, Neil, this last September, I had occasion, my wife wants to take a tour, or had wanted to take a tour of D.C., she had never done this. And here, while I was there, I was there for 13 months, I guess it was. And I had a chance, of course, to see the whole area. But when we went back, my first time in so many years, I didn't recognize the place. In fact, I couldn't even find the street where I had lived. And then to see this fantastic underground subway system stop right at the airport, it was unbelievable. But my office was at National Airport, And as we go along, I have a story to tell you about an air cargo mishap at the airport. So you let me know when there's enough time for me to tell that one, okay?
Okay. Yeah, you know, you were there. When did you leave? 68? Did you say you left Washington?
No, I left the company in 68. No,
okay.
I left Washington in late 63.
Okay, that's just when I was getting to Washington. I got to Washington, I think it was March of 1963.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And I was living out at Annandale, Virginia. And I was there for 1 year. And then Eastern shut down, as you recall, Charlotte and New Orleans about that time, about 64.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened up the bases for us to rebid. And, of course, I wanted to get back down to Miami where I was originally living. And Atlanta came open, and, of course, the rest of my career, 26 years, was based in Atlanta. But I enjoyed Washington. My wife had a stroke while I was based there, and Eastern Airlines just really went to bat being a brand-new co-pilot without, my tenure, I guess is what they would call it in the academic world. Tenure. In other words, I was still on probation, and I was flying a Convair 440 trip down to Miami, and we made stops. If I could recall those stops, it was flight 687. I'll never forget the flight. Flight number 687, and Captain John McBride, J.D. McBride, was the captain, and I the co-pilot. And our first stop was Raleigh, and then over to Florence, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, then Augusta, Georgia, down to St. Simons, and then to Jacksonville. And from Jacksonville, the flight number continued on. From there, we went to Gainesville and Ocala, then Gainesville, then over to Vero Beach, West Palm Beach, and then Miami. So you're talking about Milk Run. That was the Milk Run. That was flight 687. Yeah, southbound and 688 northbound.
That's why I like the 757.
I almost think that 687 originated in Hartford.
Well, it came through. I thought it originated in Syracuse. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it originated in Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to Atlanta, I thought, I was going to get away from these milk runs like the Convair. But to tell you the truth, Jim, I had more fun flying the Convair 440, making all of those stops.
Yeah.
Because the fun, the entire enjoyment of flying an airplane is the takeoff and the landing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did. I was based in Dulles. I flew the 757. It was takeoff, land, go to the hotel.
Yeah.
Next day, takeoff, land, go home.
Yeah. And but it was so much fun, and boy, did we have some experiences with flights on that 687. As a matter of fact, we picked up Ted Williams in Vero Beach on a northbound flight on 688 on the Convair, and our first stop was Vero, I believe it was West Palm, and then Vero. And this guy gets on, and he had a very colorful shirt, a sports shirt with flowers and so forth, and he got on, and I said, boy, this guy sure looks familiar. And sure enough, the flight attendant said, we have Ted Williams on the airplane. And he went on up to Jacksonville, and when we got to Jacksonville, we didn't have anything, he didn't have anything to eat, so he invited the captain, myself, can't recall who the captain was, to go into the cafe there, the cafeteria, or the restaurant there, and the old Imeson Airport. Remember the old Imeson Airport at Jacksonville?
Wow! Yeah.
And he bought us the meal. It was a breakfast, and so it was really interesting talking with the man.
Oh
so
yeah,
that was kind of a neat experience.
Oh goodness! No, there are so many things. I remember I was sitting at the coffee shop at Bradley Field in Hartford, and this was before JFK was president. He was making the rounds of the area, And my goodness, he came in and sat at the counter with us. And I guess he was probably two shoulders away from me. But he was quite an impressive individual.
I can imagine, yeah.
I was going to ask, who is it that said that they were out near Dulles?
Bud. Yeah, we had talked before. Remember that you were P3 and I was P3. You were P2 and I was P3 person.
That's right, too.
After 9/11, it was pretty hard to get to commute from Jacksonville to get up to Dulles. So what I would do is I'd either go to Washington National, and I'd try to take the metro to Dulles, which at that time did stop short of the airport, so we had to catch a cab after that. And when I got there, it was very impossible to get a hotel room. And when you could, it was $100 a night. So what I elected to do was go buy a motorhome. I bought a Gulfstream bus. I got it all fixed up, and I took it to the employees' parking lot, and I lived in that bus until I ended my career in 2003. And it was, I have to tell you something, folks, it's better than HBO. That employees' parking lot is really interesting.
I can imagine.
But it was fun.
Did you ever go to Evans Farm Inn out there near Dulles?
What's it called?
Evans Farm Inn. It was a beautiful restaurant. Just outside Dulles, the airport.
I heard a bunch of them, but I don't remember. The name doesn't seem to ring a bell to me. But
Well, they were still constructing Dulles, of course, while I was there, and the Home Office called and said, "We want you to take a group of senators and congressmen out to take a look at what's happening at Dulles." And so I had a number of sales reps and assigned each one to a particular congressman or senator. And I remember one of the young men, actually he was older than I was at the time, but he looked very young. I assigned him to Everett Dirksen. And I said, well, afterwards I had a critique, and I asked everyone how things went. And so I asked the young man that was in charge of Dirksen, I said, well, where did you take him for lunch? He said, well, there was a white towel right there, and I felt that was good enough. Can you imagine he took Dirksen to the White Tower? And I'll tell you what, though, I'll bet Dirksen says that damn Rickenbacker man, he's still up to his old tricks, trying to pinch a penny, you know?
You know, when I was a scheduler for Allegheny for a while, and I was based in Boston. I was a vacation relief. So for 1 month I'd be in Boston, the next month I'd be at National, and I'd be scheduling pilots and flight attendants. Well, I made friends with this U.S. Air, at that time, Allegheny co-pilot, God rest his soul, named Larry Quick, and to get my instrument rating. And there's a little airport out there called PG Air Park. Velta Ben was the examiner. And we went out to Dulles to do my instrument check ride. And the controllers were so happy to see us out there because I think we were the only airplane at the airport. And it's funny, just a few years later, we can't get anywhere near the place.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. That's fantastic. Did you ever know a fellow at Allegheny by the name of Woody Murphy? Woodrow F. Murphy. Woody was the interline man for Allegheny. And he and I used to do some visiting other airlines together, as well as travel agents.
No, I'm afraid I didn't. I was mostly a gate agent, ticket agent, so I really didn't get the opportunity to meet the people in the interline department or anybody from downtown. It was just airport people.
Sure.
But it was fun.
Well, how are things going there in Palm Beach at your chapter, Jim? Bring us up to date as to, I think you had a meeting yesterday or the day before, didn't you?
On Thursday, yes, we did, Neil. We had an excellent speaker, a young lady representing hospice. And, of course, in most people's eyes, hospice is a bad word because it connotes maybe the end of the line. But that's not the case, because there are people that hospice can help, and they leave the program because they have recovered or something like that.
Wow,
and
great.
So this lady was excellent. We had 18 of our members there, and I was really pleased, because they had a lot of good questions, and she answered those questions, and I could tell by the reaction of the fellows and girls that they appreciated this person. And I also got a letter in the mail from the Miami Home Office, and our past president, who is a retired captain, Dave Tompkins.
Dave, sure.
I don't know if you know that name. But,
yeah, I know Dave. I know Dave.
Dave, well, Dave, evidently in the meeting minutes of the last advisory board meeting, said we got to learn how Jim Hart in Palm Beach gets all these speakers. So I just got through with a two-page letter to him telling him where he can find speakers, and they're very plentiful all over the place. And we really make it a point to have excellent, informative speakers, because I think that's what holds the group together.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like any organization that has monthly meetings, the most important role that anyone has as far as committee chairman is the entertainment chairman. And,
right.
And you're talking about the Rotary. I also was a Rotary member for a long, long time here in Jacksonville. And Jacksonville, Florida was the first Rotary club in the state of Florida.
Wonderful.
It was the very first. And I don't know if you knew it, but Paul Harris used to be here in Jacksonville.
No. Fantastic.
Yeah. And the story is that Paul tried to get a group of men, professionals, that wanted to meet and have lunch and visit with each other and share, information and whatever. And they tried to get a group. This was before Rotary was started, I think. Then he went up to Chicago. Wasn't it Chicago where it was actually founded?
Yes, 1905 in Chicago. Club
right.
Number one. Yep. I wanted to mention to you that my affiliation with Rotary goes back, let me see. It was 1968, the year that I left Eastern. I was a JC, and of course the JCs are community service-minded people, and it's a good fertile ground for Rotarians to look for new members. So I became a member of the Summers Connecticut Rotary Club, which I guess at that time had only 7,000 people in town, nestled right between Hartford Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
And in our little town of Summers, you know John H. Breck of Breck Shampoos?
Right.
Does that
all
ring
right.
a bell with you?
Oh, well, Breck Shampoos does, yes.
Breck Shampoos. Well, John Breck and Presley Blake, mm-hmm. who is one of the founders of Friendly Ice Cream, all of these people lived in our little town. And
wow.
So we had quite a group, the head of United Technologies. Well, anyway, we had such a nice time there. I went through all the chairs at the Rotary Club, and then the club put me up as a district governor in 1979 and 80, which was the 50th anniversary of Rotary International. So the 50th anniversary meeting, the main meeting, was in Club Number One in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did I have a fantastic time, and that you might remember, 79, 80, there was a fuel crunch. And I was driving a little Volkswagen, thank goodness. And when my secretary would get in touch with the clubs, they say, what does Jim want when he gets here? And he said, just 5 gallons of gasoline. That's all he wants. And so you can imagine me. Part of my territory was in the Berkshire Mountains up in western Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
So I took care of that part of the tour early on, so I didn't find myself up there in the wintertime in snowstorms.
Yeah. Well, my experience with the Rotary is that it's a wonderful organization. I wish I could have stayed in it, but I had three businesses that I was trying to run at the time, and making all of the meetings. Of course, that's one of the main things that that members need to do is to make all the
that's
meetings
right.
once a week. And I just found myself I just couldn't do it. But I had three wonderful sponsors. I had one sponsor that you know. And a lot of folks don't know John Engle here in Jacksonville.
John, sure.
And John, a lot of folks don't realize that he was an admiral, a rear admiral. And
in the Navy.
right, in the Navy, and he was credited as the skipper of an a destroyer escort with actually destroying a Japanese submarine. And that's kind of unusual. I think only two times in naval history that it had been done, and he was the first escort that actually scored a direct hit of a submarine. But John was one of them, and then I had Vice Admiral Easterling here also, and then the president of Jacksonville University, Fran Kinney, who is very well respected here in Jacksonville area. She was a president of Jacksonville University. So those were my sponsors, and quite a group of distinguished people in the downtown club. I miss it.
Well, absolutely. You mentioned the DE. In that little town of Bath, Maine, where I was born, one of the most exciting things we did during the early days of World War II was to go down to the Carlton Bridge over the Kennebec River and watch a brand-new destroyer or a DE slide down the ways.
Right.
It was just beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt for a second, gentlemen. I want the rest of the listening fans to remember our number. It's 1-213-816-1611. 213-816-11. Join the conversation. We need callers. Come on in and give us your 2 cents with her. We'd love to hear from you.
While we're waiting, if we do have a caller, but I wanted to bring the listeners. I'm sure we have many listeners. By the way, our average listening audience is running about 1,000 people per show. Now, that includes not only the live broadcasts that we do, but it also includes the archived shows that we have. So every one of those is, we're averaging about 1,000 per show. But to bring you up to date about Mr. Floyd Hall, I tried to get in touch with him, and I was concerned because I couldn't get an answer at his home. I kept leaving message after message on his recorder. And so finally, I called Charlie Simons, and you know Charlie, Jim.
Yeah, yes.
And I asked Charlie that if he knew how to get in touch with Mr. Hall, and he said, "Well, let me see if I can call his daughter and talk with her." And so he called Nancy, and I don't know what her married name is now, but Nancy said that he had taken several falls there in his home, and that the last one he had hit his forehead on the fireplace there, part of the fireplace, and they found him on the floor, took him to the hospital, and apparently he is now in an adult care center. So I tried to call all of the adult care centers and the rehabilitation centers in the Dartmouth area, because Charlie said that that's where the daughter thought that they had taken him, and is to one of the hospitals over in Dartmouth. And so I checked with all of those hospitals and care centers, and right now I'm still looking to see if I can find him.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So his birthday is next month, April, so we're hoping to see if I'm going to still do some detective work, see if I can find one of the homes that he's staying. It's kind of unusual that the daughter didn't know the exact name of the home and where he was, but she's in Colorado. And I think he had two daughters. One had passed away several years ago, I guess. And it's just, now he does have a son-in-law, I believe, that lives here in on the east coast of Florida. I'm not certain where exactly that is.
Not to change the subject, but isn't tomorrow the day that they're going to fly the DC-6? DC-7? Excuse me.
DC-7. No, that was changed.
Bring us up to date on that, Jim.
Okay. It was changed because I think you may have gotten a word from Bill Hirsch. The airplane was taken to New York to do promotional work, advertising work for Sony, and I think it was for ABC News. In fact, I think they painted one side of the aircraft the colors of another airline, perhaps Pan Am. But it looked early on as though they weren't going to be able to get back to Miami in time to get this thing going on Saturday. So they rescheduled the event for Saturday, April 16, and it's going to leave from Opa-locka Air Station. Everyone that's going is requested to get in touch with Vito Borelli at the Eastern Airlines office in Miami, or they could call me for that matter, and I'll make sure that they get on. But it's $125 per person, and the flight will leave Opa-locka. It will come north to Palm Beach. They'll be flying at 500 feet, so people can get some pretty good shots from the air. It'll go back to Opa-locka, then continue on down to Key West, and it will come back from Key West and, I guess, tool around a little bit more. But the $125,000, we understand, is just enough to cover the cost of the fuel. And I believe they have some volunteers who are going to be flying it. I have 8 people from my chapter that want to go. 2 of them are former captains, Sam Burton, and the other one is Hank Aniston. Hank lives in southern Connecticut. Sam is here in Lake Worth. But I'm kind of looking forward to it. It'll kind of relive old memories as far as I'm concerned, because I think I told you that I, for quite some time, would commute from Hartford to Newark in the morning when I was in the home office. That's before I had an apartment in the city. And I would get on an airplane at 7 o'clock at Bradley. In fact, the stewardess would have my Danish pastry all warm for me, which it was spoiling me. And we'd land at Newark, and I'd catch bus number 107 over to the Port Authority building, and then either hike up to the home office or grab a cab, one or the other. But I could, my en route time was not much more than an hour and 20 minutes. And you've got people, of course, in their automobiles that sit for longer periods.
Yeah. Jim, what is the 16th? What day of the week is the 16th?
It's a Saturday. A Saturday.
You know, I think I am very tempted to drive down, and my little brother's got a condominium there in Fort Lauderdale. I'm very tempted to drive down and see if I can get on, be one of the passengers on that flight.
Well, that would be good if you can.
It sounds like a great. It sounds like it's well worth it. $125. I hope you didn't mean $125,000 for the operational cost.
No, $125 per person.
Yeah.
How many seats are available now?
I think there are 90 that are available. And did you know? Oh, what's his name now? Who is the actor who lives here in Florida, and he has his own 727 and a couple of other
John
airplanes.
Travolta.
John Travolta. Well, you know, John Travolta donated $50,000 to this DC-7 event, and for that he has a perennial seat on that aircraft anytime he wants it. Can you imagine?
Wouldn't it be something if he decided to go on the 16th?
That's right. It sure would. I'm going to be in touch with Vito frequently, and I'll let you know by email what is going on. I also did ask Vito. I was prepared with my credit card or cash or a check if we did go this coming Saturday, but they didn't really clarify how we are to pay for this trip, whether it should be cash or what. So I'll get that clarified, and I'll let you know by email.
Okay. The 16th on a Saturday wouldn't be too bad for me, and it's out of Opa-locka. I used to be the chief flight instructor there at Opa-locka during the Cuban invasion back in those days. Remember, the military took over entirely the Opa-locka airport, and I was the chief flight instructor for Terce-Air Aviation. There during that time, and so it would be nice to revisit Opa-locka Airport again.
Sure. Did you ever learn how that highway, Military Trail, got its name?
No, I never did. No, military trail.
Okay, well, apparently during World War II, when troop movements, trucks and so on, used to travel Route 1 or A1A, the German subs offshore could track these movements. And, of course, the United States learned about this and said, uh-oh, we've got to have a highway further inland. And that's when they built the military trail, and the name has stood up all these years. And, of course, it goes up. It goes from Miami way up to Jupiter.
That's right.
I remember that.
Well, we only have a few more minutes of showtime, and it's been great chatting with you. It really has. And hopefully you'll be with us every Friday, Jim, and we'll get some more callers or some callers to call in and share the airtime with us. Hate to hog all of this time, but it's been really interesting talking with someone like yourself that has so many stories that you can share with us.
I'll be calling my friends, too, to ask them to tune in.
Good.
Very good. And let's see, is there any other, do you have any special things that we need to remind folks of?
No.
We do have a lot of the chapters that are sending us photographs now of their meetings. I have the Lake City Bunch that sent me about 10 photos that we will be putting in their own special album. So if any of the chapters want to send pictures, we will set up an album for that chapter on the website, and there you can put as many pictures as you want to send me, and that way you can go back and have your friends to go through the albums and see some folks that you haven't seen in a long, long time. You may not recognize them with a little bit of age on them, but it's a good place to put some pictures, and we want to keep the website very entertaining and interesting to our visitors to the website. We do have 514 members now of our radio show, and we would appreciate any support you guys can give us, and we do have a special donation, PayPal donation, that if you want to make a donation, contribute to keeping us on the air, we certainly appreciate it. But at the very end of our show, we only have about a minute left here. We'd like to, between Bud and I, and I'm sure Lou Ann and Margaret, and on behalf of Jim Hart in West Palm Beach, we'd like to say that for tonight, it's been great. And we'll sign off by saying that it's the Eastern Airlines radio show, and where all the women are strong and all the men are good looking and all the children are above average,
here,
as another popular show would phrase it. We want to say good night to all of you. Thank you so much for listening to us. And, Bud?
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Neil, Bud.